Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 327 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing this evening?
Fantastic. That's all I got.
I say this evening because the show usually goes up around midnight, and I assume everyone waits by their pod catcher of choice, waiting for this to pop up, like I do. When I know a certain, when I know my favorite podcasts are coming up at a certain time, I sit there and I just hit F5 all day, waiting for it to come up.
You're like Brock Lesnar. You're just hitting F5s all day.
Right. Is that how his music goes?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. It doesn't go spend my days working hard on the road, but the hands of the clock keep spinning too slow.
I think that is it.
I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight.
I think that's too much. I think we have to pay the royalties now.
I talk sang it, though.
Oh, this, you are known for your spoken word albums.
But isn't it that, like, if, like, I ran it through auto-tune, because it's not the actual beat or something, I wouldn't have to pay royalties?
You know what? We should get our lawyers that are on a retainer to answer that question.
Our crack legal team?
That's right. Our legal team that's on crack.
Oh, man. I just have a guy. I just have a guy that runs mortgage scams.
Oh, I have what where my father goes. I call the congregation, and they're a brain trust. They have all the answers.
Is it a bar?
Yes, it is. It is the seediest bar you've ever been in.
Now, see, that's a podcast. Mm-hmm. Nobody's getting the cantankerous drunken old man view on podcasting.
Well, you know what? You come over and we'll have a talk with my dad sometime.
All right. I'll secretly be recording him with my phone the whole time.
Oh, it'll be great.
I'm sure that'll go over well when he finds out what I'm up to.
Oh. Well, I've told you a few stories.
Yep. I'll get to live one.
Or not live through
one. Or not live one. Either way, one of two things will happen.
That's right. Let's move on.
All right. We've got comic book stuff to talk about here. Both bad and interesting news when it comes to comic book conventions as we start 2017. Happy 2017, everybody. I don't pay attention to these New Year's sort of thing. You know, we don't even discuss any New Year's stuff on After Dark.
That's okay, because I fell asleep at 11:45.
I was, I think, watching old episodes of Red Letter Media while my wife and son slept.
Ah.
But more teases of what that next big event is going to be for DC, and more so who's going to be involved with it. I think we've learned some of the digital sales and freebies. I've got the updated list here. What we read this past week, Detective Comics number 947 and Civil War 2 number 8.
Yes, sirree.
When you're a title and you have two numbers in your title, it's very confusing to stupid people like me.
Yeah, me too.
What we're looking forward to coming out this week, and the first week of our new feature on the show, Todd and Joe Have Issues. I just kept it with Todd and Joe Have Issues. I did not add the one a week because it would have made the title on the website too big and unreadable.
You're fine with whatever you do.
And I'm sacrificing my comfort for a lot of things in the show here today.
Uh-oh.
And, maybe some Todd's Art Attack stuff today. Who knows?
It's gonna full be show.
It's going to be a plethora of things to discuss this week.
A plethora?
Yes. So, this past weekend was the last comic book convention of 2016. It was the Marvelous Nerd Year's Eve in Dallas, Texas. And we talked about it. It was a biggie. It had Star Trek people, Guardians of the Galaxy people, a guy wearing a sweater patterned after that of Matthew Lesko, and Stan Lee. Well, apparently, Todd, as word is coming out, things did not go swimmingly for this convention.
Yes, I had heard.
Stan Lee. Now, first of all, I was shocked to see how much Stan Lee gets to do comic book conventions.
That should have been the lead.
Right. Why was that not, like, top story on the New York Post?
Mm-hmm.
That people paid Stan Lee $200,000 to show up at a comic book convention. But apparently he did not get most of his stuff. The convention was spread out throughout the entirety of this hotel. The hotel was promised a certain number of rooms would be reserved based on the convention, and then when they were not, the hotel threatened to shut off the rooms that they already had. People apparently didn't get the memo and might have gotten locked out of said rooms and lost a lot of their stuff. So this convention sounds like a complete and utter disaster, which is a shame.
It is, because that sucks for, you know, people who, you know, who volunteered, who did this, who went, maybe lost their stuff or had to pay tons of money that wasn't their fault to get stuff back. Mm-hmm. They say that they're probably not coming back next year. So who knows? I just feel bad for a lot of what went on there. And then they said, what was it? Because of the way it was set up, that the vendors weren't near the autograph people, so they had to remind people, you know, that, and that sucks for somebody who's trying to make a buck. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I couldn't even imagine.
And it's, and this was being touted as like a big deal, you know, like if you go to like local Joe Schmo Con, I think if something like this happens, you're willing to forgive it. But this was a high ticket price thing. And through no fault of your own, whether you're a volunteer, whether you're someone who's attending, or whether you're one of the other media or comic book guests and things fall apart, you know, you did your due diligence in thinking things were going to run smoothly, and they don't. And it really stinks.
Well, you know what? And sometimes there's no malice in it.
Right.
Just things get screwed up. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Because I've heard cons where people, like, you know, were screwing people over. A lot of people seem to be saying that this just seems like a giant, like, mix-up. I don't know. So, hopefully it was, and nobody was out to step on anybody there.
Mm-hmm. So, in this happening, a much smaller convention started to get off the ground called the Universal Fan Con. They did a Kickstarter to raise some funds, I guess, for their venue. They're going to have their first show in April of 2018, kind of touting themselves as the fan convention for all fans. You know, if you feel marginalized, if you feel that things are not spoken to you, whatever it is, it's going to be the convention for you. However, the interesting thing for me is that it's, again, April 2018, but it's running at the Baltimore Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
They're running a town. They're running a building that already has a convention in it.
Oh, boy.
Right. And but it's not only, it's not them running a town, and it's not them running a building that another convention runs. It's them running the building of the convention. The lone holdout. In the analog that I make all the time of professional wrestling to comic book conventions. And right. That's Baltimore Comic Con.
But I'm fine with it because it's in April.
Right.
And I don't think it's going to take anything away from the Baltimore Comic Con. Now, if they had brought it close, remember like when New York and the Wizard Cons would go head to head?
Oh, yeah.
And that's, to me, that's more something.
I remember it was 2 years ago, October, where there was something like within a train ride in New York, there was four conventions going on at the same weekend.
Right. And even then, that's not so bad if it's like a little city con. I don't mind because it's not, you're not touching this. And I think like this is, as you said, what this con is going to be. It's going to be something different. I don't think it's going to attract the mainstream crowd in droves. So I don't see any, like, not that there was a problem with it, but affecting the Baltimore con any way, shape, or form. If it gets huge, come and see me. But right now, I have no worries about that.
I don't have worries either. I'm just pointing out that the lone holdout in all the conventions, the one that we say when this one falls, all others shall fall with it,
mm-hmm.
that someone else is running their same building with a convention, a comic book convention.
Have you fired off an email for our award show to these people?
Now, there is a part that we discussed prior to the mics going hot-ish,
mm-hmm.
that I... short answer, no, I did not, Todd.
I'm just kidding.
No, I did not. Maybe I will. Maybe I will. Once I hear back from the George Foreman people, I'll contact them.
Delightful.
So, the rumblings are starting to happen. We had discussed last week that there's going to be some sort of big Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo event this summer involving Batman and the rest of the DC Universe. Well, it came out via tweet, and this is the other reason why I still like Twitter. You know, I may run through the muck some of the other social media platforms on After Dark this week, spoilers. Jeff Johns heavily tweeted, or heavily hinted in a tweet this weekend, that he was writing some sort of Watchmen something. Phil Jimenez responded that he was maybe doing something a little Watchmen-y-centric, perhaps. And then Dan DiDio, in response to a Diane Nelson tweet, said that he'd like to see something that hasn't been done in Warner Entertainment, was the DC Universe meets Watchmen.
Uh-oh.
Now, where there's smoke, there's fire, Todd. And we know that the before Watchmen stuff, when that came out, was very polarizing. Remember that? Remember that firestorm when all those books came out and the people involved with those books should be drawn and quartered and how dare they do this and all sorts of jazz like that?
I remember because either you were for it or against it.
Right. That was all you could do.
Mm-hmm. There was no in between.
So I obviously Jeff Johns and Phil Jimenez on that book and, you know, Dan DiDio tweeting like, I'd like to see it happen. It's like, you're the guy who makes those calls, ain't you?
That's right. when you're running the company, it's like, oh, you know, maybe we could do that. I just hope they got written permission from Alan Moore.
Oh.
Oof.
Well, is there a current new season of South Park on?
Not right now.
Okay, so now's the time. He's not busy right now.
That's right. I think he'll be all for it.
Right.
And we'll get back to actually DC doing that. But now he gets to look forward to the interviewers who are like, oh, so your Jerusalem book is out, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, now it's out and what?
I'm just laughing. Go ahead.
And he's like, oh, you know, yes, it is, and talk about it. And, like, and you know, as it goes on, and what do you feel about DC reusing your Watchmen character? It's like, you know what? Just go back to any interview anybody has ever asked him, because he's just going to spit vile and venom that you haven't done anything new in comics since he did it first and all that stuff. So I just find it funny. It's just going to be Ryle Allen Moore time for the next like year. I can't wait for it.
So I have a couple questions based on what you just posed here. One, do you think DC maliciously looks at what Alan Moore is announcing and then says, let's plan a Watchmen type thing right around the time when he'll be doing press for his whatever?
No, because my thing was that book came out a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like for the paperback, maybe. Okay. I don't know. But I don't think they time it around it, because he's going to get fired up regardless and talk about it.
Now, if I am a journalist of any kind,
mm-hmm.
and even if I'm just like some cub reporter off the street, and this is my first time walking the comics beat, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and they say, go interview XYZ, I might throw it in Bing just to see some information about this guy.
Right.
And then knowing, and let's say I come upon the assignment of interviewing Alan Moore. It's like, hey, go and interview Alan Moore about Jerusalem, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard of Jerusalem. I've never heard of Alan Moore. I throw both of them in to Bing, and it comes up, oh, he wrote Watchmen. Well, let me type in Alan Moore Watchmen. It's like, huh, he seems to really get perturbed when you bring this up. You know what the first thing I'm going to do? I'm going to bring it up.
No, see, then you're a rookie reporter because you want to get some of the interview in.
Oh, it's like the fourth thing you bring up.
See, every reporter, every interview I've ever seen, the second to last question is the Watchmen question.
They pull a Columbo on him, like they're like, all right, thank you very much for your interview, Mr. Moore.
Just one more thing.
We'll see ourselves out of this cave that you live in.
That's right.
I know you were DVRing South Park.
And you're rewatching The Wire for the 900th time. Could you please teleport me to the nearest plane of existence?
I don't know if you have to sacrifice a snake or do something with a snake. It's something regarding magic, but if you could do it. But before you do, one more thing. He curses you with a glass eye after you ask him the question.
That's right.
But I wouldn't even broach the topic of that. I would ask him exactly, even if he led me to it, even if I'm like, oh boy, Jerusalem, finally out in paperback, this is a huge deal, Alan Moore, you know, to see something still out there, writing, kicking it, putting out this quality material, and I'm pinching myself underneath the table, maybe, just, maybe, I don't know, I might be, because I thought I had nits on me from the cave, and then he starts to try to bait me. He says, oh, I hope when they put my stuff in bookstores, they put it with the J's as opposed to the rest of my horrible work that I hate.
Ugh.
And I'd be like, oh, you hate some of the past work you've done? Nope, I would let that one go. And people would say, what a terrible reporter Joe is. He didn't follow up on that obvious question that Alan Moore. It's like, well, I want to live. Thank you very much. I don't want to be hexed by a man who lives in a cave in England somewhere.
And has talon rings and...
Right.
Ugh. I think he does wear finger armor. I'm not sure,
oh,
though.
Oh, boy. For all the finger battles he gets in?
That's right.
I don't know. Oh, my goodness.
He's the finger
knight.
But
that said, I'm excited. DC's doing okay. The Before Watchmen stuff is what it was. Not a lot of it has a permanent place in my collection, I guess would be the best way to put it. But if this is done by the folks who did DC Rebirth, and it ties into the ongoing DC Universe stuff, then I might have to get it.
Let me put it this way. Jeff Johns writing it, Phil Jimenez, or as I call him, Phil Jimenez, drawing it. I'm going to get it. Younger Todd would have raged at the sky, how dare you do, and I've said it before on here, how dare you do this to Alan Moore with the greatest story that's ever been told in comics. Now I'm kind of like, roll them bones. I want to read this story. So I will be picking it up.
I'm excited for it.
Mm-hmm. Before Watchmen, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you try.
You tried, you failed, and you succeeded with Before Sandman, with Sandman Overture, so you won there.
Mm-hmm. You win some, you lose some.
Mm-hmm. You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life.
I was going to say Before Watchmen, but okay.
Yes.
This is another weekend where there are conventions, but it's not any big conventions this weekend. No media guests, no signings, no artists or anything like that. You know, that's the usual kind of rotating group of ones. There's like DeLand, Florida, Maryland, Michigan, Virginia, you know, it's the usual suspects, but it's nothing really major going on. Next week, I think we pick things back up with Philadelphia having a big convention, another one in Florida. Albuquerque is having their big convention. I think they're kind of partnered up with VegasCon, and that's going to have a bunch of people at it. But next week, I think the cons will be hitting hot and heavy. But that's quite all right, because if you're not going to conventions this weekend, that just means you have more time to listen to podcasts.
Oh, boy.
and the best place in the world to get podcasts is soon-to-be-named network, where you could hear this and this show, plus back episodes of this show, as well as Longbox Heroes After Dark, Prodigal Sons Podcast, which hasn't had a show in a while, even though they've been recording them. I don't know what's going on there. Puzzle Warriors 3, which I'm sure I'll have a lot to talk about this week. Podvocacy this past week did a review of X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
Good movie at the end, not so much beginning.
Right, and they discuss a lot of that. Who else do we have? Profane Argument, of course, comes out. Fresher in Parlance have been on point. Talking Gimmicks with Joey and the crew and talking old wrestling. This week they talked about all the hillbillies in wrestling.
Ah, the fans or the wrestlers?
Well, Vince has always been a big fan of hillbillies for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
This was back before we knew Vince was the owner of the company, right? He was just like this straight-laced announcer man.
Right.
But whenever there would be like a hillbilly character, he would always like hoop and holler it up and like, ha ha, I love it! my Vince impersonation is now Bruce Prichard's impersonation of Vince, but it works. So they debut Hillbilly Jim as like a guy in the fan that gets trained, a guy in the crowd that gets trained by Hulk Hogan. That gets over. So it's like, hey, if one hillbilly works, let's add three more.
A whole family.
a whole family of hillbillies. And then it's just, they kind of get into just like, it's like, oh, you're a random guy with a beard. Here, put these overalls on, and now you're Cousin Luke, or Cousin Junior. And then Uncle Elmer holds up Don Olmeyer for money, or he won't wrestle in Saturday night's main event. Fun stories like that.
And then you put a hanky in your back pocket, and you're over.
Right, that's a family, less of a bunch of hillbillies.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Orton's not a hillbilly, come on.
What? He is.
He's running a scam. But anyway, also, I appeared on the most recent episode of The Winter Palace with Mark Cole, friend of the show, talking all sorts of comic book stuff. So be sure to check that out. That was the one I forgot to put up on the site, so I'll make sure to fix that problem before this episode goes live, so it's as though this conversation never happened. But check me out on that. Check out all the other shows on the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, and remind me, Todd, to tell you about the crazy revelation that happened on this past week's Fresher in Parlance show.
Okay, after we're done, right?
After we're done. I say go listen to it for yourself if you're a listener of these shows and so forth.
Let me get right on that.
Right. Well, I know you're all over that.
Mm-hmm.
So, digital sales and freebies. Beginning of the year, there's still some stuff, new stuff on sale. It was so funny that all those other sales were going on for so long, and they all ended at exactly the same time. They all ended yesterday. And I'm like, oh, man. So, it's all new stuff. Top Cow has a bunch of stuff on sale. Stuff from Jeff Lemire before he made it big with Lost Dogs, and after he made it big with Underwater Welder. The aforementioned Alan Moore has League of Extraordinary Gentlemen available. Now, this one is strange to me because the comic book box office Poison I see is there collected through Top Cow, or Top Cow, excuse me, Top Shelf, but then IDW is re-releasing it this week as well, so I'm confused as to what's going on with that book.
Sometimes, you know, things change hands.
Apparently, anybody could just print whatever they want.
That's right. That's why we're starting our own comic company.
Yes. I'm going to reprint issues of Amazing Spider-Man.
I'm going to reprint issues of Batman.
There you go.
And we're going to just... But they're going to be a knockoff version. We're going to change some things.
Right. So, instead of having 8 legs, this spider on his chest is going to have like 5 legs.
That's right. This instead of having big pointy ears, he's going to have smaller ears on Batman. So that should get past legal.
And then there is the Best of Indie, and that's with an IE. Sale is going on as well, and there's a bunch of stuff in there as well. I know one that I read this past year was Atomic Robo. I've been a fan of that Brian Clevenger's book for a very long time, so that is on sale. Gail Simone's Leaving Megalopolis is included in that sale, if you never checked that out. A lot of stuff that had been Kickstartered or self-published or so on and so forth. That is all stuff that's on sale, so go check out that. And Marvel is having a sale. Hey, Todd, remember last year the crossover that changed our worlds that Marvel did?
Secret Wars?
No.
Which one?
Standoff.
Oh, that's right. Standoff. That happened. Now I remember.
Remember Standoff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can get all the Captain America stuff. They have all the trades that crossed over in it for like $4 each. Or in like a giant, massive collection, you can get them all for $10.
Ah, yes. See, my mistake was technically last year Secret Wars did end.
Right.
At the beginning of last year, because that didn't come out on time. Like a good miniseries should.
Right, and we'll get into that good miniseries that ended on time here shortly. But some of the new freebies that are up, and this will continue to lead right into things. I've updated the list, of course. I do my best to try to update that as often as I can. But Marvel's new ones that they added up this week were a couple of them been on the list before, a couple of returning ones, a few new ones. Alpha Flight number one, whatever the most recent relaunch from like the late 2000s launch of Alpha Flight, that's in there. The Avengers Thunderbolt crossover from 2004, the first issue of that is in there. Next Wave Agents of Hate number one is available for free, as is the first issue of 1984's groundbreaking crossover mega event Secret Wars number one.
Never read that.
No, you never did?
Never read any of the Secret Wars except the last two.
The last two.
Yeah, there was the Secret Wars that we just had last year.
Right.
With Doctor Doom. And then remember there was that Bendis one that was really, really late?
That was Secret War, not plural.
That counts.
All right, fair enough.
The S fell off in post. That's...
I vaguely remember reading the first Secret War when it came out, and I was way too young to understand it, or dumb, or both. Mm-hmm. Probably it both.
It was Beyonder you?
Yes. And then I know from its reputation, Secret Wars 2 is very not good.
That's what I hear.
Right. And I don't got enough time in my day to be reading bad comics on purpose.
What? I have to lose a bet to do that.
I had an offer this week. And this is what I'll tell you more about off air as well. But I had an offer this week to appear on another podcast. The only caveat was I had to watch the movie that they were going to be talking about on their podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, I said, I saw that movie in the theaters. I rewatched it recently, like within the last like 4 or 5 years. I go, I'm not going to have enough time and I can't bring myself in my busy schedule in life to watch a terrible movie, you know, on such short notice. But thank you for the offer.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Let's get into what we read from this past week. I would like to start with Detective Comics number 947.
Okay, let's start with that one then.
Written by James Tynion IV, with art by Raul Fernandez and Alvaro Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the end of the Victim Syndicate. But I think it's also the end of the first arc, I guess. You know, this is one of the double shipping books. We're 12 issues into this run. And I think this kind of ends this first chapter, I guess.
Right.
It leaves a few dangling plot threads with, you know, Batwoman maybe possibly finally talking to her father. And more information as to what and where is going on with Tim Drake, but the main crux of this is Stephanie Brown's spoiler. She decides to go against Batman and his team.
Right.
And essentially says, end it now, or I will release all of your information out to the world.
Right.
And Stephanie Brown, spoiler, has Batman and his whole crew over a barrel while all this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had told me that this was going to happen in this issue when I read the first issue of this run, I would have never have guessed it would have come to this point.
No, it doesn't. And I like the fact that, you know, her name matches, like, her agenda now. I loved everything about this. I love the fact that, you know, that when she turned, we thought it was going to go, and she's like, no, I'm not on your team either. I'm, you know, I'm out for myself. I'm out for this city. And I'm like, you know what? And it's weird because in a weird way, she almost makes logical points with what she's saying. But, you know, we understand that, like, the villains aren't just going to give up and go away. But I like it because it's not like, this is great. And when she stands up to Batman, you're like, oh, boy, honey, you don't have a chance. And she kind of understands that. But she's going to make her ground, stand her ground anyway. And, it, you know, I really like this character more now. And I want to see where it goes because I think she's going to be like a background character pulling stuff. And, you know, maybe what's going on with that. And then you said, like, there's more going on with Tim Drake and see how that, like, she might be if he comes back anytime soon. So this book is one of those things, like I always say, it's like Batman is the best Bat book on the market until Detective comes out. And then, you know, flip-flops, and here we are, Detective's the best Batman book on the market right now.
Right, and I think I'd mentioned, because, you know, we didn't really do a year-end review sort of thing for ourselves.
Right.
But when I was on Winter Palace this past week, and Mark kind of sprung it on me of what my favorite book of the year was, it ended up being Detective.
Hmm.
And I gave you credit, you know, saying that this is a book that wasn't even on my list. Just initially, I'm just like, nah, it's not really Batman. It looks like it's a weird team. I don't like what's going on. And then after the second issue had come out, you're like, no, you need to get this book. And I did, and I loved it. And, you know, I think it was because I had no expectations for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I liked it so much and love it so much. Whereas, like, the new Batman, I had a little bit of an inkling of what Tom King can do based on his work on Vision. So while I like that book a lot, and I do, I was going into that one, like, thinking, like, okay, I'm going to like this because I'm aware of the writer. And not to say that I didn't know who James Tynion was or wasn't aware of it, but it was the concept and the team that wasn't grasping things for me. Right. And then it did, and I'm in, and I love the book. And I can't wait to see what happens next. You know, I don't think the victim syndicate people are done. I don't think we've seen the last of them. And it'll be very interesting to see where Stephanie Brown shows up again. I would keep her off the table until Tim comes back. Or at least we're close to Tim coming back.
I would agree, but I disagree, and we shouldn't see her, but we should feel her ramifications. Do you know what I mean? Like, it'd be like, you won't see spoiler, but it'll be like, the team goes out on a mission and it's like, oh, well, this happened and this happened. And because spoiler did this, you know, that tripped us up over here, but you never see it. I don't know if I'm making any sense on what I'm trying to say. So you know that she's active in the city because that's kind of what they lead you to believe when this issue ends. So I'm cool with it. But yeah, she should be heard and not seen, if the best way to put it. Yes,
that makes sense. Like, even if it's just something of like she's starting to build her own team herself or whatever it is that she's trying to do, and while other stuff is going on in Detective Comics, maybe you see people moving in the background. You don't know who those people are, but like 4 issues from now, you see that they're reporting back to spoiler. Or you see like graffito tags of stuff or markers on things like this street is protected by spoiler. And we don't do a lingering panel of it, but we just see something in the background.
See, I kind of disagree. I think it's more because she's not out to be the vigilante, like this street protected by spoiler. She wants to get rid of the vigilantes in Gotham. So I think it's more her sabotaging the things that Batman and his group are trying to do. Do you know what I mean? And I don't mean it in a deadly way. Just like, oh, you know what?
Throwing the monkey wrench in.
Right. I'm going to cut off your supply line for parts. Or I'm going to do this, and now you can't get batarangs. That's more I see what she's doing, like she did with the thing with the bat signal. You know what I mean? I see more of that happening, and like you don't see her do that, so that's the perfect scene to describe what I mean.
No, I get, saying like this street is protected was a bad thing, but it was more so of like we're seeing her do whatever it is, and they don't explicitly say XYZ happened because of spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
We see X one issue. We see Y 2 issues later. We see Z 3 issues later. Then, maybe an issue later after that, it all gets pieced together that those 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 things that we saw are all because of spoiler.
Gotcha. Boy, well, this was a spoiler-filled talk of Detective Comics.
Right. But again, I have faith with whatever he's going to do with this, you know, with this character, with this book, is going to be good because the last 12 issues have been great.
They have been. They really have been. I, without going off on a tangent here, a lot of the DC books have been really good. It seems like, you know, Classic Coke is back.
I thought they took it off the market so we would lose the taste for it. Wasn't that what they said?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
These comics are made with real sugar cane again.
Oh, what was it? You know, we didn't do it in the news, only because it came across the wire, as it were. A little bit late, but there's some publisher. Let me pull this up. Kind of in who's the middle talking about things. Only because I'm also...
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting. Is it the guy who's putting it back on newsprint paper?
Yeah.
That seems awesome, by the way.
Right, so Alterna Comics is going to be doing their single printed issues at $1.99 because they're going back to newsprint.
Which that means you have to go back to like old style coloring and all the little dots for certain colors. Oh, I miss that so much.
Right now, I don't know what Alterna Comics is publishing, or I don't know who's involved with them. It says right now we're aiming to launch this line with a few issues priced from $1 to $1.99, spring summer of 2017, which is this year now.
Maybe we can get them to publish our Batman and Spider-Man
knockoff. Sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me just see what they got on their thing. I would be remiss to mention them because of this.
They just got the Long Box Heroes bump.
Yeah, yeah. So they got a bunch of books. New one coming out next week called Wicked Righteous. A lot of their stuff right now is just digital. They have a little bit of print stuff. It's mostly digital, but this is, I guess, how they're going to foray into print. And I will also say, go to Alterna Comics, not a sponsor, sign up for their newsletter and get 30 of their books free.
Wow.
How do you like them apples?
I don't like apples. I like blueberries.
I had a long apple discussion with my son the other day, so that's another off-topic conversation.
Okay, let me write down apples. Sun apples.
Hot apples.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. So, the other book that we're going to discuss, and this one, the only reason I kind of leaning off it a little bit, waiting to get to it, is because it's Civil War II, number 8.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that's caused me such grief in my life that I have to watch a football game this weekend.
Oh, boy.
And not only that, I have to watch my Raiders lose.
What? Your Raiders? They're yours now?
They're mine now, if I have to watch them.
Oh, boy. I lost them in the custody battle?
Yes. So, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Dave Marquez, amongst many others. So this is the ultimate blow-off to everything that's going on with Tony Stark and Carol Danvers and the Inhumans and all this. We find out what happens to Tony Stark. He's not dead. She-Hulk is not involved in any way, shape, or form. Very few of the plot threads, I feel, are wrapped up.
Right.
They allude to a lot of things that are either already are happening or things that will be happening shortly or things that were teased years ago and never happened, which we'll get into shortly. But I did over on one of my little Facebook. Well, you go ahead. What did you think of this?
I was very underwhelmed. I was really underwhelmed because when it was all said and done, you know, I think they dropped the ball on Stark. What was going on with that? I don't know. And then on top of that, now the Inhumans have a foot in the cosmic being door. I'm like, oh, good. Now we have cosmic Inhumans. Good. I was worried. But yeah, in the end, I was like, this was more your, like, you enjoyed it more, which is funny because I think I was more into it going in, but as I read it, I wasn't a fan of it. I thought it was way too padded and stuff going on that I didn't care about. The feud I didn't care about. And when it ended, there was nothing there that really interested me. And I have to say this at all. So I didn't care for it one bit.
Well, a lot of people apparently hated this book.
Mm-hmm.
For a variety of reasons. I was really hoping for the best with this. And I think because I was hoping for such good to come out of this, that I don't hate it as much as everyone else. However, it's definitely not a book I could recommend. It was definitely flat. It was definitely overinflated. You know, the lateness, of course, kind of muddies up some of the other books that have already, like, 3-4 issues in. That if everything was kind of lined up nicely, would have been a nice rollout for some of these other books. Maybe to get a rub from coming out of this. Or them alluding to what's going to happen to these characters. It's like, well, we've known for the last 3 months what's going to happen to these characters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The part where, and again, we're spoiler discussion about this book. You've probably read Civil War II number 8 by this point, or if you haven't, you've read all the spoilers, whatever it is. So Ulysses, because of his visions, has been evolving, and he has gone to a higher plane and is now an Eternal?
Or just a cosmic being, at least.
Right, and who is it that comes and gets him?
I'm not 100% sure.
I think it's Eternity, maybe, who comes and gets him.
And yeah, says, I think it is Eternity.
Right, you come with me now? Now, other people have mentioned, and not me because I don't read the books, but apparently, like, this contradicts where Ulysses was in his own miniseries, as well as where Eternity is in other books. Like, apparently in the Ultimates 2 book, mm-hmm. Eternity is locked up in prison.
Got out. For good behavior.
And all the other events that are happening, it's like, nothing of it lines up, none of it is mentioned. But then we get that flash of all the other events that are either gonna happen, or might happen, or could happen, which is where all the extra artists come in.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I'm not the first one to point out, and other people have, is the alien invasion one, where it's like those giant spider-like robot things.
Right.
That was teased in, I forget which crossover, might have even been going back as far as, like, Fear Itself.
Oh, boy.
That was coming. Like, it was toward the end of Bendis's run on Avengers, leading into Hickman's run on Avengers, where both of those books had, like, you know how those books were famous for, like, oh, here's this giant board I have behind me with all these different things pinned to it. And it's like, oh, it's spoilers and clues for the future stories. Well, this is the one that's never happened. And now they've brought it back up again. So I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen there. And this is me being the dumb comic book person, but, like, I'm like, oh, if they bring that alien thing, I'm all for it. But I don't really care about the Inhumans versus X-Men stuff. I don't care about this one. But this one that they've been teasing for 6 years and they've never delivered on, maybe that's the one that'll get me.
Oh, boy. Do they see you coming?
Well, I will say this. They do see me coming because I am, at the end of the day, a comic book mark. I love my big, giant, dumb events, no matter how many times they burn me. You know, we were talking earlier in the show about, like, oh, this DC Watchmen thing is going to be great. And, you know, time has told us that more times than not, it's not going to be great. But because DC has been so good over the last 6 months, we're like, yeah, it's going to be great. You know, we're being optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
And
see,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, me, I kind of go by event status, because even, you know, you might have to go back and check the tape. But, like, Fear Itself is like, like, that one doesn't really interest me as much as this one. Like, so we'll have to see. And giant spider invasions, not so much. Now, if you turn it into giant bug invasions and it's the third annihilation wave, I'm all in.
I have to look something up here.
What are you looking up? Stuff?
Okay, so one of the next ones that are coming out is Monsters United. Monsters Unlimited?
Monsters, Inc. I don't know. Something right. Like that.
Something about monsters. So the reason I was all in on that one before it even delved into whatever's going on here, was because I like Cullen Bunn and I like the monster side of the Marvel universe. Now there's all these crossovers and all these like .mu books and all this other nonsense. I'm not getting any of those. I'm getting the main crossover and that's it.
Okay.
Now, if this book was solicited, let's say, after Civil War II, I would probably think twice about it. But as you mentioned, going through, like, the Marvel events, taking them one by one, and I'm going to go with, like, line-wide events. I'm not going to go with, like, oh, this is the one that takes place over here, this is the one that takes place over there.
I was just going to ask that, because I equate Monsters Unlimited to not anything like Civil War II or Secret Wars.
Okay, right. See, neither do I, but the fact that Marvel does is another thing. Like, just as an example, like, I'm going to look at something, say, like House of M, right? House of M is an X-Men crossover, but every book had a House of M crossover.
That's an event book to me.
But I didn't see that as an event book, even though it was crossing over and all those other things.
See, we differ on that. That was a Civil War II / Secret Wars event book.
Okay, so I'm just looking at, like, we're going to look at the last 10 years, Civil War. I read Civil War, and at the end of the day, I didn't like Civil War.
I liked Civil War.
Okay. Then we get into Secret Invasion. Secret Invasion was the next big crossover. I gave up on that one. I read the whole thing, but it was, like, by the middle of it, I'm like, okay, I don't see anything really happening with this. And, like, granted, they did the whole thing where it's like, oh, Norman Osborn fired the bullet to kill the Skrull Queen, so now the villains are in charge. And that really wasn't what happened, because the villains really weren't in charge. But, like, it was at Secret Wars where, like, the paint started to come off these Marvel crossovers.
Secret Wars?
Secret Invasion.
Okay, you said Secret Wars. That's
my apologies. So right, Secret Invasion. Then the next one after that is Siege. I didn't even bother with.
Siege I kind of read because I was interested in Thor at the time, because Doom was running around in Thor.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
So then the next one was Fear Itself. Now, Fear Itself I didn't get too involved with, only because I remember it being originally solicited or talked about as being a Captain America Thor crossover.
And that's not what it was.
Right, okay. Now, and that's the thing. At the time, I'm like, I'm reading Captain America, I'm reading Thor, I will get a crossover between these two characters. And then, like, 2 months later, after the book gets delayed, they're like, yeah, like, it was so sad. You know, especially knowing now what we know about Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker. In all these interviews, they're like, yeah, the story was getting so big, we decided, why not make it an entire crossover for the entire Marvel Universe?
That's exact. Like, yeah,
I could hear the gun clicking up to your head to say these things in this print interview. I'm right. Skipping this one.
Wow.
And I think I read Standoff because it was like a mini one. And
Standoff, I don't count as a big one. But
okay, so then Civil War II, I was excited about only because I'm like, oh, it's Bendis, it's all these things, and blah, 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 blah. I haven't read a real Marvel crossover in like 4 or 5 years. Let's see how this goes. And it didn't go, at the end of the day, it did not go well.
Civil War II, you mean?
Civil War II, yes.
But don't you see, in years, can't you count Secret Wars as a crossover? And you like that one.
Secret Wars. Oh, yes, yes, I forgot about Secret Wars. Yes, yes, so I liked Secret Wars. So
yeah, well,
I'm all over the place.
Right, you are all, because you said, yeah, it's Civil War II. It's been years since I enjoyed one. I'm like, I thought you really, because I was all for it. I shockingly, Doom, you know, Hickman, which made me nervous, but that worked out. And then you throw Assad Ribic on top. I'm like, that was a good one.
Stand corrected. I think it was because of how good Secret Wars was that made me want to try Civil War II.
Right.
I corrected myself.
You're all right. I'll let you go this time.
All right. But what I'm saying is, whenever the next big line-wide crossover comes through, I'm going to be very leery in whether or not I have to check it out.
Oh, we should do DC now.
What do you mean? Go through their crossovers?
Yeah, I love most of their crossovers.
What are you going back to? Crisis on Infinite Earth?
Millennium.
Invasion.
I loved Invasion.
Yeah.
I even liked, what was the one, because, blah, 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 when the sun was going out.
Blackest Night.
No, it wasn't Blackest Night.
Or Final Night.
Final Night. Was Final Night. I like that. Where they ate every comic had an issue. What would they do if it was your last night on Earth?
Yeah, that was good. I'll give you that.
I like that one. That was mm-hmm.
Trying to think whatever. What other ones? Hang on. I gotta search this one out.
I'm trying to think. There was Armageddon 2001 I loved. That was a good one.
Okay.
Uh-oh, he's found them.
All right. Now, again, a lot of these I don't, you know what I mean? Like, okay. Luckily, they have the big ones bolded, right?
Okay.
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
That's good, but confusing.
Legends.
I love Legends.
Millennium.
I liked Millennium.
Cosmic Odyssey, does that count?
No, but okay.
Invasion with an exclamation point.
I loved Invasion.
Armageddon 2001.
I loved Armageddon 2001. I was a DC mark back then.
Yes. Now, okay, so see, I'm gonna take creative license here and say I'm not counting War of the Gods.
Oh, even though that there's a whole crazy story behind that. But yes, that's not so much.
I think we talked about the crazy story behind War of the Gods in a past episode here.
We did.
And I'm also going to make the executive decision, if your storyline is only in the annuals, it doesn't count. Like Eclipso, The Darkness Within, or Bloodlines.
Or 2001, Armageddon 2001.
Oh, was that only in the annuals?
Yes, it was. It was only in the annuals. That was a time where DC just did their crossovers in the annuals.
Ah. All right, so we have to count Eclipso, Darkness Within, and Bloodlines, right?
Bloodlines not so much, but I liked Eclipso.
Okay. Then we have Zero Hour.
Zero Hour was good. Starman came out of that.
So Zero Hour was good. Underworld Unleashed.
I have a trouble when your giant crossover only has a three issue, but even then they were oversized. So maybe.
Right. Final Night, of course, we mentioned.
I liked Final Night.
Then there was, DC 1 million.
Nope. I was not a DC 1 million fan.
Now see, if you just read the four issue miniseries,
mm-hmm.
it's not terrible.
Who wrote that, by the way?
Your pal, Grant Morrison.
That's right. No, I wasn't a fan of that.
Okay. Day of Judgment.
That was interesting. Not great.
Interesting, not good. Our World's at War.
No, that was terrible.
Right?
That's the one where they made Guy Gardner mystical for right. two issues and then was never mentioned again.
Now we dive into it. We have Identity Crisis.
I'm torn on that book. There's some really good things in that and some really bad things.
Right. Infinite Crisis.
No, that didn't, that started good. And that was the heyday of DC with, Secret Six and OMAC and all that other stuff. But that fell flat at the end.
So then you have like, I guess like you would count 52 and what would be 1 year later, and then leading into Final Crisis.
Well, other than 52, the rest of that is a mess.
Right. Now, I will say this. In the middle of that, you have Sinestro Corps War, where we all thought things were going to be turning around.
Mm-hmm. Though that was the perfect crossover for Green Lantern. And right. one issue of Blue Beetle.
Yes.
So I don't count that as a cross. Like, it is a crossover, but it's not a company crossover.
Yeah. They would, fix that by doing Blackest Night after Final Crisis.
I liked Blackest Night. That got a little too big, but yeah. that was good.
Then we get, and then that leads into Flashpoint. And then Flashpoint leads into New 52.
No.
And then the closest that for New 52, everything was kind of like, kept to its own thing. It's like, here's your Batman event. Here's your, Superman event. Here's your Mystical People event. Here's your Green Lantern event. Like, and nary did they cross for the first year until we get to Forever Evil.
Right.
Which had its lead up of the Trinity War.
Right.
Right? Right? So then that leads into New 52 Futures End.
Right.
Followed by Convergence.
Right.
Followed by DC Rebirth, where we are today.
Yay! DC Rebirth was good.
Yes. So DC had a rough period there.
Had a skid. He skidded out there.
So it was after, Final Night, where things kind of fell off?
Yeah, pretty much.
Until... until definitively Sinestro Corps War. So they had a good 11... They had a good 11-year drought.
I like the Raiders.
Right! DC, the Raiders of comic publishing? Maybe?
No, the Raiders of comic company-wide crossovers.
There you go. Oh my goodness. So you can tell we're giddy and we don't have a ton to talk about.
No, we don't. But we're filling an hour, man.
Right. Stop watching the clock.
No, but that's just a rough estimate. That's all right. I'm saying.
So that's what we read from this past week and over the last 20-plus years. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Time or so, we publish the pull post, which is a link to a link with all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them shipped to your home, however it is that you get your books, know what's coming out. Be forewarned, be forearmed. And I wanted to do the deal with the covers.
Right.
For the DC books, but you're, one, getting way more DC books this week than I am, and two, no sites had both covers for all the books.
That's just crazy. I'll give you a site that has all the covers. All
right, you do that.
All right.
But also, Todd and I are keeping a tally starting this year of how many books we're getting from each of the publishers. So at a year from now, we'll see that we purchased however many DC books, how many Image books, how many Marvel books, IDW, Dark Horse, Archie, etc., 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 just to kind of have a running tally there. And we're also going to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out, resetting the timer.
Why not? Let's stick with what works.
That's right. So I started the show, I'm looking at your list, and I'm going to guess the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Saga number 41.
It is not.
What?!
I do love me Saga, and it usually is, but this is one of those niche things for me that I'm a sucker for the Captain Atom character, and anytime he has a reboot, I will go for it, and the new 52 one really sucked, and this is Kerry Bates, who wrote the 80s run, where he became the Silver Surfer-looking dude. But for some reason, I don't know why, I'm really looking forward to this book. I'm probably going to be disappointed, but I'm really looking forward to the fall and rise of Captain Atom.
And this is, I think we talked about last week, where there's that weird section of previews. It's like, hey, here's all the DC Rebirth, and here's all the Johnny DC book. And then, here's, these other things that are, they're DC comic characters, but they don't tie into anything else that's going on, so we put them over here. And that's where Rise and Fall of Captain Atom is.
After I'll read, I'll let you know if it does fit in anywhere.
All right. Maybe this is, the secret book that leads to the DC Watchmen crossover.
He is a character that a Watchmen character was based on.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
Starting lies and rumors here.
That's right. Innuendo. That's what we're known for.
That's right. You know how I feel about rumors and innuendo.
No, I don't.
That's the other guy.
Oh, okay. So I'm looking at your list.
And yes.
I see a lot of books on here. Is it Saga 41?
It is Saga 41.
Mm. And I like looking at our books that we have the same amount of books this week, but our Image books are the exact number together, but we swap DC and Marvel numbers.
Yes, I noticed that as interesting and funny as well.
That's right. It's like poetry because it rhymes.
Oh, my goodness. We say it enough, it's going to be ours.
That's right. Copy an A, get an A.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other stuff that's there, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, past pull posts, so you could see maybe you missed a week, maybe you think your shop is shorting you, maybe the digital platform changed the name of a book or something on you just to pull a fast one. Check out all of that information there, and also you can click on a little store icon there and buy shirts and stickers with our fancy logo on it, just like you see in the header. And above that header, if you have your ad block turned off like you should, like any good internet surfing person should be, is our Amazon click-through. And we had a really good month for the month of December. We do thank everyone, of course, for purchasing any of their purchases through our Amazon link, including people who would purchase such things as a Rube Goldberg calendar. Not the professional wrestler Goldberg. Apparently there's another one.
I was going to ask.
Someone also purchased a super warm Game of Thrones winter fleece cotton hoodie.
Oh, sounds delightful. Because winter is coming.
I like that they had to throw super warm into the description of the item. I'm just saying.
Well, what do you want, like, lukewarm hoodie?
If I'm purchasing a fleece cotton hoodie, mm-hmm. I'm taking those three words together at their word.
I don't know.
That it's going to be at least really warm, bordering on super warm.
You never know. There might be rips in it for cooling down.
And someone also purchased a Transformers Generations Combiner Wars Voyager Class Cyclonus figure.
Now you're just saying words.
Our Amazon click-through is Mad Libs this week.
That's right. Hey, do a Transformers Mad Lib for me.
Do a Mad Libs for me. Oh my goodness. So, thank you to everyone who purchased something through our link. And the one other thing that you could check out while you're over at longboxheroes.com is our Joe and Todd Have Issues segment thing feature that we're now doing. Todd and Joe. I put your name first. Todd and Joe have issues.
Could we backtrack for 1 second?
Uh-oh.
Don't we have an art attack this week?
Oh, we could put art attack later, but we could put it here right now since you're calling me out on it.
I'm just doing things the way we normally do things.
We don't do things normal anyway.
All right, you know what? You pick the order. You're the director. I'm sorry. I overstepped my bounds.
Todd's art attack this week was Todd got a chance to scan actually, in a story told on this show.
I think it might have been on the After Dark.
On After Dark, of a Jonah Hex sketch by Paul Gulacy.
Right, because I was meant to buy a page off him and things fell through. So he said for the same amount of money, he doodled me a sketch. And he drew me that Jonah Hex right there.
And I will say this, that's how Jonah Hex should look.
He looks very hexy.
He looks very gruesome and frightening. He shouldn't be a pretty boy like he is on Legends of Tomorrow.
What? He's pretty boy. He's like the Two-Face of Western Confederate heroes.
I'll take it your word on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a side note, unrelated, I don't know. So, they're doing a Batman Lego movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is spinning off of the Lego movie, like it's Will Arnett Batman from that, you know?
Right, the Lego Cinematic Universe.
The Lego Cinematic Universe, and the Two-Face that's in it,
mm-hmm.
is Billy Dee Williams' Two-Face from the Tim Burton Batman movie.
That never got to see the light of day.
But the Lego figure for him is possibly the most gruesome Lego figure I've ever seen in my life.
Fantastic.
Because I know the kids want a figure where the skin is just melting off a guy.
Oh.
I want one like that, but I don't know if kids do.
I'll take one.
So if you go to a convention or you did a sketch yourself, or if you purchased some artwork or got something for Christmas, tweet it at Todd's Art Attack on the old Twitter machine. And if we see it, when we see it, we'll retweet it so the rest of the world can see the fancy art you have hanging on your shelf.
That's right. That's what we do here.
Because I do actually have some art on my shelf, only because it's up there precariously that I haven't gotten frames for.
Uh-oh.
That's why I say hang it on your shelf like a dummy. So let's get into Todd and Joe Have Issues, the first installment of this, where we read Astro City number 1/2. Now, when I did the write-up for this, Astro City, written by Kurt Busiek, art by Brent Anderson, with Alex Ross covers, this was a book that I had not read since it had first come out many, many moons ago. It was a Wizard magazine mail-away. They would do, like, half issues. It was mostly... Because at the you have to remember, at the time, Astro City was an Image book before it went over to DC.
Right. It was at Homage Comics.
Right. Homage Comics. Which was, you know, a sticking point for friend of the show Alan Moore before.
Listener and fan.
Avid listener. Before, because DC purchased Homage Studios. And it was one of those things where, like, Alan Moore's like, I'm never going to work for DC again. I'll publish my books through Homage. And then Homage gets purchased by DC, and they're like, no, no, Alan, don't worry. We'll still be a separate entity, and DC will have nothing to do with us, even though they're purchasing us and paying the bills. And he's like, I'll believe you this time.
And that's right. As long as those checks don't say DC, I'll cash them.
Right. So I did the description of what this issue was from memory, having read this issue many years ago, and I wasn't too far off. Did you get a chance to read this?
Yes, I'm holding a physical copy in my hand.
Oh, now see, I didn't go and dig the physical copy out. I went and did the digital copy that was available myself, just because it was a little bit more convenient.
What was funny was actually it was on top of my dresser, so it was really easy.
Just by coincidence?
Yeah, like, honestly, it was just like there's a stack of books, and on top of it was the Astro City one half. And I was like, should I go turn on my tablet device and download that? Or should I just grab this issue right here and read it?
So the crux of this issue is there is a man, and that's the one thing about Astro City is, you know, it's all these different analogs. You get people who look kind of sort of like DC characters, kind of sort of like Marvel characters, and, you know, you get the Kurt Busiek take on them, where, you know, we were joking before, it's like, oh, it's our Spider-Man that beats copyrights, or our Batman that beats copyright. I don't want to say that's what Kurt Busiek was doing, but he was doing it in a much more creative and much more original way than us two were talking about it here.
And he came up with some of the greatest names for characters since the Silver Age.
Right. It was very Silver Age-y.
Yes, just for the fact that in this issue alone, there's a group of time-traveling bandits that are called the Tempest Fugitives. I was like, I forgot how awesome you were, Kurt Busiek.
And that was the thing for me as well. I forgot how awesome this book was with, like, all the, you know, the little nods to things. And you have the All-Americans where, like, it's a baseball and a football player who are kind of like Cap and Bucky analogs, and they're going up against a villain who's a referee, but then he's the guy who's knocking over banks, and then all of a sudden, like, three pages later, he's fighting, like, that universe's version of whatever the Anti-Monitor would be.
That's right. Listen, the villain was the, who looked like a referee, he was the timekeeper.
Right.
And he had his Tempest Fugitives, and then, oh my god, and it was the All-American, and don't forget Slugger, the Junior Dynamo.
Right. See, I love all that sort of stuff in comics, and to see it kind of done with a new slant, as Kurt Busiek was doing it, I really enjoyed it quite a bit. And so the lead character, and a lot of the stuff is, so you have all this stuff, and really the superhero stuff is like the background stuff in Astro City, for the most part. Like, there'll be like some sort of big story where it's like, oh, here's this fourth-rate hero who doesn't get respect, and, you know, maybe he does something very well, but no one remembers it, and he has to make the decision of, like, not letting people know that he was part of this successful mission. Or, you know, whatever it is, 100 different things like that. But it's mostly about the people in Astro City and how the stuff with the superhero stuff affects them. And the lead character of this book is a guy called Michael Tenick, where he keeps having memories of a girl. Every time he sleeps and he can't sleep and he's trying everything to sleep, and this girl is, like, haunting his dreams and he can't figure out why. Until he's visited by the Hanged Man, who's essentially this universe's version of the Watcher.
I always felt he was more like a Doctor Strange.
Okay.
like the mystic, but he could be like a cosmic being. But I never got a good feel whether he was magic or cosmic, if that makes any sense.
See, I think it was like a little bit of both. It was like he took the elements, because like he, there would always be those stories of whenever something big would be going on in Astro City. Mm-hmm. If it was big enough, the Hanged Man would be in the background, just watching everything that's going on, not interfering. And that's kind of where I drew my Watcher analog from. Because
you know,
typically he would not interfere, but in this issue, he interferes greatly.
Right.
So what essentially had happened was, who is the leader of the Time Fugitives again?
The Timekeeper in his referee outfit.
Okay. So the Timekeeper decides he is going to change time so the All-Americans do not exist. And in doing so, he creates a different reality, essentially that because these other two characters ended up fighting on a Monday instead of a Sunday, this girl that he's been dreaming about, grandparents never met. So therefore, she never exists in what the world is now, but for whatever reason, he still remembers her, and in what the other reality was, that was his wife.
Right, the ripples of memories are still there.
Right, and right now, for whatever reason, the Hanged Man is going through all the people that are still remembering parts of that timeline and telling them, like, you need to stop, essentially.
He's basically telling them, this is why you're thinking what you're thinking. And then he gives them an offer where he's like, I can make you forget if you want, if that will make it easier, because the burden gets bigger and bigger on this person. And I like the fact that he immediately says no. And he's like, okay. And the touching thing is, as he's leaving the Hangman, he's like, the guy's like, I got to ask you, does anybody ever choose to forget? And like, there's this touching moment where he thinks the Hangman is smiling under his mask. He's not sure. And he's like, no, nobody ever chooses to forget. And I get goosebumps when I think about this story, because there's no more story to me in comics almost that's more horrific and touching at the same time. To lose the person that you loved and lived your life for, but to not give up those memories because they haunt you. I don't know. It's one of Kurt Busiek's best work, as far as I'm concerned, in a little dinky half issue that was sold from Wizard.
That, right. It was a mail away from a price guide.
Right. Which later on, Image actually did do a physical copy that you could buy, because that's what I have.
Right.
But yes, so it's bizarre.
Bizarre, but good.
Right. Did you like it?
I did. For the most part, we're going to be picking books that we both like very much.
If not, at least one like to try and pawn off on the other.
Right. And we'll, we'll be going through that as more and more of these come up. So if you read it, let us know what you think in the comments of this post, because we'll have another one coming up here for next week. And Todd, you made the decision, the executive decision, if you will. You are an executive here at this podcast, even though I'm the president from the voting that we had. You're an executive at the very
least. I'm one of the sleazy businessman cabinet members you brought on board.
So what is the book that we're going to be talking about reading next week?
It is going to be Swamp Thing 21 by Alan Moore, friend of the show.
Oh, and it was like kismet. It was like poetry. Oh.
Because it rhymes.
Yes.
And drawn by John Todleben. The Anatomy Lesson. Maybe one of the classicest issues ever. Is classicest a word?
Classic is a word now.
Okay.
It's one of those things where, at the very least, in modern comics, and I say modern comics within the last, 40 years or so. Where,
Bronze Age and all.
Right. Where they do a story where essentially they tell you everything you know is wrong, and it's not an imaginary tale.
Oh, boy.
You would get that a lot of time on, like, Superman comics in the 50s, where it says, like, not a hoax, not an imaginary tale. And then you would get to the end of the issue, and obviously it would be an imaginary tale.
Wink.
Or it would have no consequences or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this was one of those things where Swamp Thing had been a certain type of character for the better part of the 10, 15 years he had been being published. And this was the issue that just decides to say, you know what? Everything that you read about this character, nah, we're going to change it.
Everything you knew was a lie.
Right. Everything you knew was a lie. And, you know, this is a book that I think both of us kind of hold in high regard.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to the other listeners out there checking it out. Now, this is a book that you could probably very easily find. It's collected everywhere. I'm sure DC has even done, like, dollar issues of it. Unfortunately, it's not on sale, but any sort of digital media thing, you could probably get this issue.
I think there was even Essential. Remember when they were doing the Vertigo Essential issues?
Mm-hmm.
There was right, some early Alan or Swamp Thing Essentials.
Right, that's what I mean. I think they did, like, they were, like, dollar issues.
Right, when they were doing the Sandman Essentials at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe you already have this in your collection. I would not doubt it if many of you listening right now already had this in your collection.
If not, you should have it.
Right, this is a perfect opportunity for you to go put it in your collection.
Right.
And I guess then, is there anything else that we need to discuss?
No, I don't think so.
All right, so be sure to follow the show at Longbox Heroes on Twitter. Follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Sposto. I'm not doing any wrestling stuff until like middle of February, and then it's getting to be back hot and heavy again.
Are you doing a Valentine's Day show?
No. AIW, affectionately known as Root Beer Wrestling by Todd, is doing their first show of 2017, entitled Walk the Plank.
Arr.
Mm-hmm. You'll laugh now. but AIW is going to do, I got a chance to peek at the lineup, and I think it's going to be a great card to kick off 2017 with an indie dream match or two, a surprise or two, and some fun stuff definitely to check out. If you've never checked out AIW, you live in the Midwest, Ohio, etc., this would be a fun one to check out.
I'll get Joe to tell me all about it, and then anybody who wants to know can PayPal me.
Oh, boy. I got some... I got some good stuff for you to throw that PayPal bounty out around, but even I'm not that much of a dirtbag.
Oh, boy.
I'm a dirtbag, but I have my line.
You don't have all the dirt in your bag.
Oh, boy. I've got enough. All right.
Okay.
I've got enough to cause problems.
You're like Layla Miller. You know things.
You beat me to it.
Were you going to say that?
Yes, I was. I was going to say, like Layla Miller, I know things.
See? We're simpatico.
Yeah. All right. So longboxheroes.com, soon-to-be-named-network.com. Follow us when you see us. Closing out episode 327 of Longbox Heroes, and for Todd, this is Joe, and we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!